Hello and welcome to Horrible Friends. It's a podcast in book club format about horror movies. This week we've got 13 ghosts, but it's spelled really bad.
It's starting off 1-3 and ghosts.
Three ghosts.
Starting off, my name's Kyle.
I'm Chris.
I'm Mike.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Jarvis.
And we're just going to quickly go through a little bit of history, some plot, some cinematography, sound effects, and a little bit of a spooky meter towards the end. This one was a blast from the past, a good old 2001 movie. Dan, give us some history.
All right, first off, what grade were you guys in when you saw this movie for the first time? I was in sixth grade when this movie came out, I think.
So fifth for me.
I just saw this movie as we're recording this, pretty much, so.
Yeah. I don't remember watching this movie because, like, at this time, there was a lot of movies that pretty much had the same exact plot. Was a group of people trapped in a haunted house. It was this one, House on Haunted Hill, and there was definitely a couple other ones, so they all blended together. I couldn't tell you when I saw this.
So what you're saying is there were a lot of movies that gave you the sense of being claustrophobic?
Yes, claustrophobic. Very terrible thing.
It's a very terrible thing. It's very serious. I'd say it's probably been like a decade since I'd seen this movie.
Have you, but for those of you who have just seen it this go-around, did you guys never watch the Sci-Fi Channel? I feel like it was on constantly throughout my entire childhood.
This is like that classic 4 a.m. garbage sci-fi time movie.
How dare you, sir? This is that classic 4 a.m. beautiful movie that gets you ready for the day after doing nothing of value all night.
I'm getting the strong feeling that you like this movie.
I will give you the... How do I phrase this? I liked this movie as a young man, and we're going to talk about some things here on this podcast.
So you just like garbage. You like garbage.
We're in season three, pal. Like, yeah.
I know, man.
To all those who listen, they should know by now that I find endearing qualities in a lot of terrible, terrible movies.
Well, hold on. So now that we're here... Jarvis, when you were in fifth grade, I guess, which ghost did you most personify with?
You know, that's a great question, Kyle. And, you know, I've asked myself this from time to time. And I think it's the ghost baby. That, like...
He was the firstborn son, absolutely.
The firstborn son, which I am. And you know, I see why you would say that, because I'm a fat slob who cannot keep food in his mouth because I shove it in there too quickly. But
I'm sorry, that's the great child, not firstborn son.
That was disturbing.
I love
that. That was the most disturbing.
You got me. You got me. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Neither of those are correct. I most identify with the... Hold on.
Do you want me to list all of them right now?
No, I'm going to get them up on the Joojals.
What did you call it?
It's the question.
Am I offended?
Person ask themselves as they come into age is which one of the 13 ghosts do I most identify with?
Should I continue until 12. Jarvis is ready? Maybe I'll continue. Hang on. And then when Jarvis is ready, he'll interrupt me and we'll be okay with that. So the director...
I just need to get all the 13 ghosts up. Go ahead.
You get that.
There's only 12.
I'm going to say the director and the writer.
Shut up.
So the director of this movie is Steve Beck, who, oh my God. What a fucking angel this man is.
Go on, Dan, give it to me.
Hey, Chris, I got a great product for you.
Dan, don't tell me you're going to try and sell me on TugCon again.
No, not this time. This time, I'm here to talk to you about a different part of the ship. I'm here to talk to you about Anchor.
Anchor? What's Anchor?
Well, Anchor is, in my opinion, the easiest way to make a podcast. Listen to all these different features that it has. As free to host, there's a creation tools that allows you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer, whatever you need. Anchor also distributes your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more different areas. You can also make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything that you need to make a podcast in one place.
Wow, that's really cool. So if you're listening to this and you've always wanted to make your own podcast and there's something you're really passionate about and you want to just get out there and have people listen to it, download the free Anchor app now or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Okay, but besides Anchor, I do want to talk to you about TugCon. This year, I was thinking that we have Josh Brolin come.
Dan, no, let's just get back to the show now, okay?
All right, fine. You know, speaking of this movie, we really have to talk about TugCon.
We don't need to talk about TugCon.
Dan, tell him why we gotta talk about TugCon.
Because he directed Ghost Ship. We have to talk about TugCon. We have to talk about TugCon. I'll see you behind the Arby's. I know Wendy's canceled on us, but it's okay. We're going to the Arby's next door. Wait, what's next door to the Wendy's? No, we're going to the McDonald's next door.
The shit rapper McDonald's.
If you look up in the news, you'll know where we're from. The shit rap. I can't talk. I'm drinking. The shrimp rapper.
As soon as I saw that this guy also directed Ghost Ship, I immediately texted Dan. I was like, I'm not telling Mike, but you have to bring it up. So,
so the ghost I typically like to, I typically found myself, bonding in terms of character.
I can't wait to call bullshit. I'm looking at some ghosts too.
Was of course the angry princess because she had. It's really about who I'd like to see in the mirror, right? As a ghost, it's like who would I like to see when I look in the mirror? And the angry princess had some great big boobies, and that's
she did answer. Indeed. Okay. Like I
they were good. They were good. They were good, and that's my answer.
All right, fair enough.
So anyway, Dan, back to the history of the movie.
I would have said that I was the child, but because I really like that scene where he first shows up and he shakes, and he spits it out and shakes his body with the food on it.
Just gives a little shake, that's all.
He's like, whoa! Like a Hank Hill movie. Anyway, the writers for this movie. Also, I wanted to say Steve Beck is also best known for mostly directing commercials. Besides Ghost Ship in this movie, he isn't really known for doing much else. So if you look up his commercials, though, he does have like at least one really cool commercial where he does like an Acura commercial where it's like a Hot Wheels. I sent it to you guys. I don't know if you guys were actually watching.
I did actually watch it.
It was pretty cool, right? That was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was neat. So our writers for this are Neil Marshall Stevens, who's known for writing for Monsters, which is a TV show. Went on for a couple of years. Super Hybrid and The Killer Eye. And Richard Deal. I don't fucking know. Richard D. Ovidio, who's
Richard
D. Fucking no.
Just call him Richard D's.
Like,
Richard
know.
D.
D's nuts.
I'm so sorry, Richard. If you ever listen to this, you won't listen to this. You won't give a shit. Fuck you, Richard. He's known for writing. Okay.
No, you turned on Richard really quick.
Fuck you, Richard.
No, I'm with Dan. Fuck Richard.
Fuck Richard.
Keep it going.
I was sorry, but no, I'm not. You're never going to listen to us, and fuck you for that. The Call, The Forger, and Hypnotic, which is one of his more recent projects that he's writing for. 2001 horror movies that we could have watched, except for this, but I would have hated if we watched it, because I love this movie. Would have been another movie I love, Jeepers Creepers.
That's a good movie.
I love that movie.
Yes.
I love Justin Long in that movie, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have watched this, but Session 9. That's a very good movie. I thoroughly enjoyed that one. And,
it's on the list.
And The Others, which I'm sure everyone's watched, right?
But I am your daughter.
Yeah. We'll get to that one eventually.
So the budget, let's get to the budget. The budget of this movie is approximately $42 million, which is crazy talking about last week.
How is this $42 million?
For next week. I don't know when we're releasing the host, but either last week or next week, we talked about that was $11 million, and this is $42 million in 2001, so it was more.
$42 million. It was pretty much like double. It's pretty much double at this point. If, maybe not double, like three quarters more. Yeah,
like three quarters more.
I think most of the budget went to actually building the house.
The house itself, yeah.
What a house.
It was a, nice house. Lots of bathrooms. The box office for it was approximately $68.5 million. So they did make some money off of this.
Yeah, from what I saw, if you include all the other stuff, like marketing and whatever else, they actually lost a bit of money on this. So,
whoopsie.
Whoops.
Which is why they played it on Sci-Fi Channel every morning of my entire childhood.
The film location for this is Jarvis's favorite place.
Yeah. Don't say it. Don't you fucking say
it. Can you name that country?
That's
America? Oh,
Canada.
Oh, it is Canada. Oh, it is Canada. It's in British Columbia, Canada. And it was filmed in Surrey, Vancouver, and at the Bridge Studios in Burnaby. Of British Columbia. So the runtime of this is approximately 91 minutes. Man, we have so many fucking taglines. And actually, there's so many taglines. I want to ask you, there's five of us. Let's figure out what our top tagline is for this, okay? So let me read them all to you, and then you guys tell me what your favorite is. So the first one is, terror has multiplied. The second one, misery loves company.
That's mine. Because this movie was misery.
The third one is being trapped in a house with one ghost. Is being trapped in a house with 13 ghosts.
Oh, too wordy.
The fourth one is terror wants company. And the fifth one is there are ghosts around us all the time. Most don't want to hurt us. But there are exceptions.
That's way too long for it. That's like, yeah.
It's like a fucking paragraph.
It's so long, right? It's so fucking long.
That's a thesis statement.
Jesus Christ.
So the tagline for this movie is, this movie has 13 ghosts. Normally one ghost is bad enough. But once you have 12 more ghosts than that one ghost, it gets 12 times as bad. So be careful out there with your 13 ghosts trapped in a house. With many bathrooms.
Or if you have 13 ghosts, it's 11 times 1 plus 2 ghosts, and that's pretty scary. Much more scarier than one ghost, so definitely don't do that.
No, I mean, that's a tagline.
I mean, they said...
That is an option, I guess.
Dan, did you see who one of the producers was in this movie?
No.
It was Robert Zemeckis.
Wait, who's that?
Robert Zemeckis. Like, you know, like Back to the Future.
This isn't that Mike Jones song, like, who? Mike Zemeckis! Who?
Mike Zemeckis. Yeah. I was going to say, they kind of said the tagline in the movie, and it's people in glass houses shouldn't throw ghosts, I guess. Well, Tony Shalhoub says,
what?
Tony Shalhoub literally says, nobody throw a stone as soon as they walk out of house.
He made that joke.
He never said we shouldn't throw ghosts in glass houses. What the fuck are you talking about?
I was trying to come up with a pun.
Yeah, there was a lot. There was a couple like very on the nose lines like that.
Oh, so, a couple, eh?
I'm glad we're discussing this before I've even started summarizing the movie.
All right, well, let me ask you guys one more question on this, because I'm terrible at this, as you all know. And I know you just told me before we started, but I didn't write it down because I don't give a shit. What is our nude clock on this? Which, if our viewers don't know, we have not done a nude clock up to this point because we haven't needed a nude clock. And our nude clock is basically just pointing out the ridiculousness of nudity in horror movies. So does anyone know what the nude clock is? Because I have no fucking clue. I don't pay attention to them titties. I don't know.
All right, Mike, go ahead with the burned image on your TV.
Oh,
got it. Right, great, Mike. Thank you.
All right, Mike. Five.
It was something like 33 minutes and 10 seconds or some shit like that.
Yeah, something along those lines, yeah.
So a third of the way through the film, you get, I don't know, is this a reward? It shouldn't be. Fuck this thing.
Oh, wait, are we doing the nude clock? Yeah, yeah, 33 minutes, 23 seconds.
Clock means, yep.
Yep. Yep, I was leaving it to Mike.
33
minutes and 23 seconds.
There you go. We got it. We did it, guys. All right, so we got our nude clock. With
them
that,
shits is voluptuous.
Let's finish this painful intro and just give it to Chris. Please, Chris, please fucking take it off my hands and go ahead and tell us about this fucking movie.
All right, thanks, Dan. Whoa, 23 minutes of recording, and here we are. Anyway. So, our movie opens with ghost hunter Cyrus and his psychic accomplice, Dennis.
Wait, can I just ask you a question? Can we call him Cyrus the Virus from now on? Because we're never going to watch Con Air on this podcast. So can we just call him Cyrus
the Virus? So says you. So says you. We're quickly coming back up on the Month of Cage, part two.
No, we are not.
So, Cyrus and Dennis, they're in this giant junkyard trying to catch a ghost named the Juggernaut. Cyrus has paid all these people to set a trap for this ghost, who apparently is number 12 out of a supposed 13 that he's working on catching.
They did have some pretty sweet, clear, shiny jackets, though.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, okay, yes. Like, let's talk wardrobe for just a second. Like, the fact that we're in, 2001? It seemed like the Backstreet Boy music video that we were in got suddenly darker really quickly, you know. Like, I loved the matching wardrobes, but and I loved like the flares, and you know, like the ominous junkyard, and but then motherfuckers started dying in real horrific ways.
Oh yeah,
this seemed like the most Jurassic Park intro with Matthew Lillard that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I started this intro. I almost invited Carmella to watch this. I was like, oh, you can handle it. And then the guy got bent in half, and I was like, she's not going to like this.
Never mind. Turn around.
You stay there. Everything is fine.
So, yeah, they're going to catch the ghost. Dennis uses his psychic abilities to find where the Juggernaut is. And in this moment, he has, I guess, these weird, crazy visions of like all the people of the Juggernaut's guild. You know, and he's yelling at Cyrus about it. Like, he told me he only killed 9. That was like 40 souls. He's like, yeah, I'll pay you more. He's like, you can't even afford that.
I would say it was at this point that it just felt like you're picking up the movie in the middle of it. Because I had no idea what was going on. They're talking about, oh, we got to trap the last ghost. And everything was so matter of fact. And it's like, oh, you owe me money. I'll pay you more. It just felt like I was picking up the movie in the middle. I had to check to make sure it was the beginning.
Well, that's the thing. This movie's called 13 Ghosts because it's the 13th sequel in a line of, you know, they started at Ghost.
Oh, I mean, I've seen Ghost many a time, but I didn't see Ghost 2 through 12. Yeah.
Can we just point out the ridiculousness of this whole thing? Because this is like a theme of the whole movie of Matthew Lillard's character being like, I haven't been paid yet. And then people are just like, I'll pay you more. And he's like, yeah, all right.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
You got me.
I'll take that as a payment. Like, he just accepts it. Like,
everyone's pretty much like, no, I totally swear I'll pay you. So I also like to point out that so everyone in this junkyard is also fitted with these fancy ghost glasses so they can see the ghosts. And
you mean they're Google glasses, right?
Yeah, they're Google glasses. The reason I really also wanted to mention is because in my research is actually kind of like an homage to the original 13 Ghosts from 1960. Because their big thing when that movie came out is that when you went to see it, you had to put on like essentially kind of like 3D glasses. It was like, you know, you'll see the ghosts come to life in color in Illusiono. And that was like their big like gimmick for the movie. So that's how they... Then in this movie, they're like, well, we'll just, you know, have everyone have to wear glasses to see the ghosts.
Yeah, you remember when every movie that came out was 3D and that's not a thing anymore?
Yeah.
They were better times. They were simpler times.
They try it like every three decades. They're just like, hey, let's do some 3D.
Well, because beforehand it was, you can see this movie in 3D and it's going to cost you about the same money as a normal ticket. Nowadays, it's, if you want to see it in 3D, it's going to cost you $23 a ticket to see it in IMAX 3D. Good luck. Bye.
That's true. Yeah, for, I mean, mainstream movies, you know, typically, like, if I were to look up Sasha Gray 3D, you know, it's
Sasha Gray with 3Ds.
With 3D, right. I mean, it's the same thing, right? I mean, you feel like
3Ds.
Kyle, can you do me a favor?
Anyway.
Thank you. So, as they're, you know, setting this trap up to catch the Juggernaut, they drop in this giant glass box. And I guess they find these two people, I guess, are trying to stop them, who named Karina and Damon, who I refer to as the ghost version of PETA, as they're yelling at Cyrus, saying that what he's doing is wrong. You know, they're human beings, and Dennis just says they're dead.
He's got a point.
Yeah. So, you know, clearly Cyrus is like, nah, fuck you, I don't care. And, you know, gets his plan in motion, starts playing this Latin chant through some speakers, and he releases the bait, which was a truck just shooting blood everywhere. And this is what causes Mr. Juggernaut to kind of show up, and as Jarvis mentioned, just violently murders so many people.
That truck rocked. That was the coolest fucking thing they've done in this entire movie.
Yeah. Anyone else think of Maximum Overdrive for a second?
Oh yeah,
a little bit.
So, and as Kyle mentioned, one of the guys is just pushed against the car and snapped backwards in half and pushed underneath it. Another guy right in front of Dennis just gets crushed by a car and broken in half. Very violent, very bloody. And eventually the ghost chases one guy into the cage, I guess we can call it, the glass cage. Ghost is locked in there, but that poor son of a bitch is locked in there with him and just gets thrown around inside it until he just eventually dies.
Cage is one way we can put it. Or we could say the ghost tube of solitude. Or is it cube? We'll go with cube.
Yeah, if cube's probably better. Because you said cube of twice. Solitude.
Don't tell me how to live my life.
The solid cube?
The solid cube. Thank you.
So they've got the ghost in the solid cube, and Dennis is walking around trying to find Cyrus. We find one of our PETA members, Damon, is dead. Boo-hoo. I knew so much about him and really cared. Then we also see that Cyrus himself is dead. So at this point, we cut and we get to meet one of our main characters, Arthur, who is actually Cyrus's nephew. And we also get like the opening credits in the scene. And it's weird. The camera's just like panning around this room, and we see different like images of Arthur, his kids, and his wife. But as the camera keeps panning and doing the opening credits, we get this other, all these different voiceovers of shit's going wrong. I guess there was a house fire. His wife Jean goes to save the kids, but she gets trapped inside in the process, and she eventually dies from her burns. It just seemed like all right, so we don't have any more budget to actually film this, so just cut in bits of the dialogue we recorded and slow pan over the credits.
Yeah, it's what's called an exposition dump, where they just give you all this information very quickly without any kind of like back into it. It's like you're just going to have a voiceover, and this is what happened, this is happened, this happened, this happened, and here we are.
Oh, don't worry. We get a break of exposition for at least the next like 30 minutes, and then it's a whole bunch of more exposition dumped again.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where you see Arthur's got all the past due bills tacked up on the walls. I mean, I don't know anybody that does that. They just want to show you that, they're broke.
Yeah, it was just showing like, so since mom died in the house, and I guess they had pretty bad insurance, they're fucked.
I love that. I've never thought about that. Like, how many movies do that? Where, like, you know, the one of the characters is put in a really bad financial position, and they just tack all of their past due letters onto the wall as if they're displaying them.
I mean, in my house, whenever a bill comes in, right in the trash. They want me to pay it that bad, they'll come after me.
Yeah, they will.
It was an interesting take. Yes, exposition dump. Yes, 100%. But the fact that they did it in a singular room.
Yes.
And like starting that with a 360, right? And then it became like this unrealistic happy white family montage from a dialogue standpoint. And it's cringeworthy. It really is kind of one of the low points of the film. But it has a spicy ending, you know, with the house fire. And then, you know, they're in complete emotional and financial turmoil. And yeah, it sped up the movie kind of nicely, which is, I mean, why it starts on the note it starts with anyway, because it just has such a huge range. And we're coming in at a convenient point from the audience standpoint.
So, as Mike said, you know, we see all these past due bills on the wall, like a giant fucking scrapbook. And so clearly Arthur and his family is on some tough times. They're now living in a very small apartment. So
Tough times with their nanny.
With their nanny. I thought to myself, like, you know, you probably could save some money if you weren't paying for a nanny in your small apartment.
Hey, don't be putting my fast-talking, sassy New York nanny out of job.
I was about to say, then who would play my sassy black woman nanny if I didn't hire her? Come on!
Fair. Very, very valid point. They're just going about their normal day. Arthur's getting ready to go to work, and this is where we also meet his daughter, Kathy, his son, Bobby, and the nanny, Maggie. And anyone else a little creeped out by Bobby's obsession of basically just death?
The morbid?
Yeah.
I wasn't as disturbed as I was with Kathy's obsession with bathroom.
Yeah, I'm about to get to that. So as, you know, they're just all there having breakfast, yada, yada, yada. Their wonderful morning is interrupted by a knock at the door, and it's a lawyer named Ben Moss, who represents Arthur's uncle Cyrus, and plays a video will for him, explaining that he's leaving Arthur and his family his house, which shows all the different rooms, and Kathy sees some bathrooms, and she is all about it.
Yes, hello. My name is Ben Moss. Hello. I am made of the souls of dead seals, and I bathe in baby oil. And by baby oil, I mean the oil of actual babies. Here's your house.
So later that evening, Ben takes Arthur and his family to the house, which, obviously, in a very remote area, no sign of civilization in sight, and not creepy at all. House is entirely made of glass, with, at least as they first see, some odd writing on it. And we also see Dennis is here, but he's disguised as an electrician, saying he's here to check the breakers in the basement because this house is cut to power to everywhere in the surrounding area.
Oh, this was another thing that really showed the time of the movie was made, because as they're driving up to this house in the woods, you hear this pretty awful rap rock song in the background. And this is like every movie from like late 90s to mid 2000s had a song like this at some point.
I'm honestly surprised it wasn't just Saliva. Like, they're just driving up, you just hear click, click,
boom. Click, boom. They should have done that as they were killing the 12 ghosts.
Yeah. Oh man, I wish. So they get in the house. Ben tells Arthur he needs to have him follow him to the library so he can sign all the paperwork. And Arthur tells his kids and Maggie that they need to stay right there until he comes back. And they don't listen. So dude, they wander off.
We can't glance over the fucking key to the house.
Oh, yeah.
The key to the house, it looked like Nefertiti's dildo drawer's key. Like, it's just ridiculous. So eccentric. It's like one of those things, like when you're handed it and you look at it, and as a reasonable, sensible person, you're like, no, thank you. End of movie. Credits.
What is this? Whatever this opens, I don't want any part of it.
You know what? I'll stick with my wall of past due bills in my tiny apartment. Thank you, though.
And the fact that, like, throughout the entire video, you know, this walkthrough of this creepy fucking Twilight-looking lawyer, the fact that, like the background, right, of this dial-up computer, it's like Bill Gates teamed up with Valak himself. like for this particular Windows Vista mod.
Oh, like, you forget what like early 2000s like
right.
interfaces were like. It's like, was it this awful? Yes, it was this awful.
The sound of dial-up is just the screams of grandmas and kittens and house fires. You know what I mean? Like, it's like straight out of hell.
I had dial-up until 2006.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. Yeah, this was a weird way to invite your kids over, or your family over to your house, I guess, after you die, is just check out my creepy photos with this creepy background with the creepy lawyer, and come on down. It's all
come
yours.
Come on down. Check out the beds, the bathrooms. Bathrooms.
I mean, everything was pointing to this guy was evil. Regardless of the fact he was trying to trap ghosts. Okay, he drives an old-timey car. Like, very old-timey. Like, Model T status car. He has a walking cane. He lives in a lavish house with glass windows and things on the wall, old pictures on the wall. Yeah, everything points to this is an evil guy you can't trust.
So let's go move into his house.
Let's move into his house, because we're broke. We can't afford to live in this dumpy apartment. So we're going to move into this lavish house that we can't afford the upkeep on anyway. And we're just going to go into more debt and maybe
with
we'll
our
sell
nanny
some
that we're still going to
with our nanny.
With a full-time live-in nanny we have hired, but we're very broke.
Well, I mean, they were financially covered.
Oh, yeah. Ben does mention that. They wouldn't have to worry about paying for anything. Which, to me, would have been a decent red flag, though. It's like,
Yeah, they would have got me there. I'd have been like, ah, oh, all right, you got me. Let's party in this big-ass glass house.
So, Ben is talking to Arthur about signing the papers. Maggie, Kathy, and Bobby just kind of start wandering around, looking around. And Dennis makes his way into the basement, looking for that money that people are always promising him. But while he's down in the basement, he starts having one of his psychic visions again. And he kind of sees all the ghosts trapped in the basement. He's kind of just like, oh, fuck, this is what you've been doing, Cyrus, you crazy son of a bitch. And then he's, you know, runs off to find Arthur and the others and basically tell them they need to get the fuck out of there.
And he was trying to warn everybody about the ghost. He was doing it in, like, you know, the disenfranchised humans.
You wouldn't believe this electrician, whose guy says the electrician, runs upstairs panting, sweating, and yelling about ghosts. You wouldn't believe that?
He was saying everything but the word ghosts. Yeah. Like, the disembodied humans, the specters, the
Patrick Swayzes.
The Patrick Swayzes! The Patrick Swayzes downstairs!
The other character that we haven't really gotten to talk about was and it was kind of a really brief thing, was Kalina, and she's the wife of the, she's one of the duo of the, like, ghost party.
The ghost pita party, yeah.
Right, yeah, and but there's, like, a quick little montage of her packing, you know, she's got her purse together, and she's like, all right, I gotta go, all right, I got my spell book, I got my hipster film reels, dynamite, okay, lip gloss is important. And then it pans away.
So while Dennis is, you know, saying everything but ghosts to Arthur and Ben, Kathy finds a bathroom. Woo!
Yeah.
Best part of her day.
Yeah, I do like how she said, I hope they're in the basement. And then she gets to it and she's like, you know what? I don't care anymore. I found it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's those glass blocks, man. That's...
Yeah.
Dan, as I understand it, you may have some thoughts about the bathrooms in particular.
That bitch loves bathrooms. So that's her fucking, as I can quote the script, because I looked it up, her wet dream. So we know where Kathy's character development has gone overall. It's gone to where I was just at. And where Kathy looks to be, which is the bathroom.
Yes. So as Kathy finds the bathroom, Dennis is still trying to tell Arthur, like, basically shit's going on. We got to get out of the house. And this is when they've noticed that Ben kind of disappeared. So we cut to him, who's going down to the basement to find his money. And he's got the fancy ghost glasses on, and he's looking through all the different rooms, and he sees all the different ghosts. And that's when he sees, as Jarvis mentions, the princess, the angry princess, sees her in her cage and says, "Nice tits." And then Shaggy, she just kind of lunges at him. He's like, "Oh, sorry, never mind." He just keeps walking. So I guess he finds a suitcase with his money in it and picks it up, and it triggers something that, I guess, activates the house or turns it on?
Yeah, so it's a lever mechanism.
It's okay. The weirdest fucking mechanism ever. It's like someone left the bag sitting on a lever where he's like, "All right, well, I'm going to take the money that's owed to me." But he like didn't know anything about it. Like, it doesn't, yeah. It honestly, it doesn't make any sense. Like, that he
no, it made perfect sense.
It was a trap.
Perfect sense.
Oh, it was sorry. A trap.
It was, a trap. 100%. It's just a trap.
Oh, he sorry. Just wanted, sorry.
He knew that guy was going to take the money, and that would set off the entire chain of events that would eventually lead to him summoning the devil's eye or the ocularis. We're not quite there yet. But
we're not even, honestly, not even very close.
You know what? No, right. I take it all back. You had to write. It was a clear trap, and it made a lot of sense. And I'm going to pass it back.
Before we go any further, do you mind if I take the remote really quick and I change the channel?
Sure.
God, please do. Please change
Thank
the channel.
Thank you. I think we could all use a break. I'm an HGTV kind of guy. I think we should watch the latest episode of Ghost House Hunters. On this episode...
Ghost House Hunters?
On this episode... I'm a math teacher, and I'm a spirit liberator. We have a budget of $13 million. We would like absolutely no privacy. Exposed brick is great and all, I guess, but have you ever seen exposed cogs? Lots of exposed cogs. And if you could etch all the Latin on all of the glass, that would be great.
There's nothing more appealing than a fully exposed cog. I expose my cog wherever I go.
Mike, is that why you're not allowed at parks or schools anymore?
I mean, as long as I'm within 2,000 feet outside of those areas, it's fully fine.
Hey, you know what? And... If you don't want to stare at the exposed cogs, I mean, some houses have, like, iPads in the walls, right? Or you could just use your dad's indoor range iPro and stare at all of our basement ghosts. But if that doesn't tickle your fancy, the floor clock is always a lot of fun to watch.
I mean, how could you turn a house like that down? I'm going to come in over-asking at $22 million.
So, yeah, Ben triggers the trap. Some of the ghost doors are now opening as he's trying to leave. The angry princess kind of blocks his way. And as he tries to back away from her, one of the sliding glass walls completely goes right through him and cuts him in half. And not the usual cut in half, but the really cool cut in half. Like... I don't even know how to explain
long
it.
Ways?
Yeah.
Long yes. ways.
Long ways. Yeah. Sure, there you go. That'll work. Honestly, this was the best part of the movie because it was the coolest, like, kill in the entire movie.
Agree 100%. Because at first, like, once you know he's split, but it's still having his, like, slow reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And then you just see his tie fall off his neck. And then, because the whole body's been split, and then he just slides down the glass.
Just slides down the glass with the back half of his body. Like, you still see brain and all still just perfectly up against the glass.
Oh, yeah, sploosh.
I'm a little split between this one and the guy getting folded in half.
Yeah, split decision?
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
Like, I don't want you to bend on it. Like, I want you to make, like, a clear decision on it.
I mean, you got to clear cut, choose one.
Yeah. Oh.
Dude, yeah, 10-10 in terms of the gore, man. I mean, the subtlety of the performance and, like, the fact that, like, his synapses are still firing. Like, he still has, like, bodily movement. Like, his eyes are like, what the fuck? And then he starts sliding down. And, like, the front half of him just becomes gelatin. basically, as he just kind of folds in on himself. Oh, so good. So good. One of the finest uses of gore I've seen in a horror movie.
So at this point, we kind of jump back and forth between Kathy and Maggie and Bobby. Maggie and Bobby are running around the house. They decide to have a little race. And immediately, Maggie loses Bobby and can't find him. So at that point, we kind of cut back to Kathy in her element, the bathroom. And she's looking through the mirror, playing with her hair. And the camera kind of pans down a bit. And we see a pair of those fantastic ghost spectacles on the counter. And as we see through the lens of the glasses, we see that, I guess, the ghost realm of this bathroom. And it is just covered in blood. Which we also see the angry princess again behind Kathy. As far as Kathy knows, like, it was just a perfectly clean bathroom, but we as the audience still see like the blood everywhere. And she opens the shower curtain, and again, she just sees an empty tub, but we see now the angry princess laying in the tub full of blood, just kind of staring at her. And Kathy turns on the faucet. She's like splashing water on her face over and over. And at one point, at the last second, she goes to splash water in her face, but it's now just blood. And before she can do that, Arthur comes into the room, kind of scares the shit out of her, and angry princess is about to attack her, but sees Arthur, and I guess just decides not to. And I guess she just dips, because then we don't see her for a bit. And Arthur's just like, yeah, we gotta go find everyone else. We gotta get the hell out of here. Which,
this is what Kathy asks, did the lawyer split?
Yes, yes, he did. Yep.
Positive. That was a good joke.
So Bobby's kind of just rolling around in his Razor scooter that he brought to the house.
Yeah, 2001. Yeah, all about Razor scooters.
Yeah. I mean, you're walking up to this house, you clearly see it's made of glass that you are now the owner of and, you know, take care of it. If my son was like, I want to bring my Razor scooter in here, I'd be like, boy, you're leaving that shit out here.
Oh, I don't think that Arthur cared about his son at all. Because throughout most of the movie, he just kept calling him the kid. The kid. He never did. Really said my
That's
kid.
That's true. He never he referred to him either my kid or by his name. Called Kathy by her name several times. Just Bobby's just the kid.
No, no, he definitely says Bobby or Robert or something like that a couple times.
Early in the movie, like in the beginning when they're in the kitchen in the apartment, he does call him like Robert.
Well, has a parent ever called you, or Jarvis, have you ever called your child by their full legal government name? Without being disappointed in them or angry at them. Oh, exactly. Never. So Arthur has nothing but disdain for his son because it's either Robert or the kid.
What I will say is, what if Bobby could have been the 13th ghost if, like, the 13th ghost was, like, the feetless child? Like, just imagine, like, he whacked his ankle so hard with that fucking Razor scooter. And then
I was just thinking the same thing because, goddamn. Hit crack your ankle with those Razor scooters. That shit hurt forever.
He could have been the Torn Prince, man. For all we know, like, you know, if old boy with the baseball bat wasn't there, like one good whack to the ankles and a broken neck later, he could have been the Torn Prince.
Yeah.
Razor scooters are dangerous in this world and the next.
So Bobby's just kind of scooting around in the scooter, and he reaches the stairs to the basement, which he kind of hears, you know, some whispered voices kind of leading him down there. And, you know, he's like, Maggie, is that you? And, you know, goes down there to follow the voices. And he's, you know, rolling around down there. He's got the ghost glasses on, but I guess doesn't see anything because most of them are, or at least I know several of them are out of their, Kyle, what were they called again?
Oh, it feels like it's been 10 days since we've mentioned it the last time. So I have not remembered what that is called.
Travis, cut it out and just paste it right here.
The Ghost Tube of Solitude. Or is it Cube? We'll go with Cube.
Great, thanks. So, as he's going around, he finally sees a couple of the ghosts, which we get to see the torso and the bound woman, which I thought the torso was kind of creepy. I think that was pretty well done.
I think each of them have like really distinctive dynamics that are really cool.
All of them, and, too, really.
Oh, absolutely, and I'll touch on it more at the end. But I mean, each one has such has such a cool background. The more you get into the lore, and there is a lore for each, the deeper down you kind of start researching into the ghosts. But really cool concepts throughout.
So obviously, ghosts scare the shit out of Bobby. He goes to run away. He falls and drops his little recording machine that he uses to talk about murders and stuff. I just called it his murder recorder. And he hears the voice of his mother. And sure enough, he looks up and she's walking towards him in her hospital gown, holding her IV, and she's got burns all over her face. And he takes the glasses off, but she tells him, like, no, you got to put the glasses on. You have to get upstairs to go find your father and your sister. And as he turns to run away, we see Cyrus. And Bobby's just like, oh, fuck. And he runs off. So I'm jumping a bit because after this point, it's mainly a lot of moments of just everyone upstairs, Dennis, Kathy, Arthur, Maggie. They're basically just wandering around and not much of importance is being said, and it's essentially just watching people walk through a maze until they finally decide to go down to the basement and look for Bobby. And as they go down to the basement, Arthur gets the classic great horror movie idea of, hey, we should split up. So, you know, we only have one pair of glasses to see these ghosts that are near us, so you, Dennis, and Maggie go that way. Only you can see the ghost, and we're going to go off in this direction where we can't see shit and probably get murdered. All right, we'll meet back here in 5. So as Dennis and Maggie are walking around, it's when he notices that some of the ghost doors are open. And as he turns around, one of the ghosts, the hammer, kind of gives him a little jump scare from his cage behind him. And it's at this point he lets Maggie put on the glasses and actually see one of the ghosts. And most of the ghosts are... You know, most ghosts are docile. They're pretty much everywhere, but those that died violently basically stay that way because it's all they really know.
I just like that Maggie was introduced to the hammer first. and the terror on her face seems moist. And that's the length of my take on the situation. She was trying to get the hammer's hammer, man. Like, that was not just pure fear on her face. She was like, okay.
Did we watch the same movie?
We did! Watch it again. Tell me Maggie looking at this thing wasn't completely fear. Because it wasn't. It was... There was a smidge of interest. And it wasn't just scientific.
So, now we cut back to Arthur and Kathy as they're walking around the other part of the basement. And, you know, Kathy's freaking out. Arthur just keeps saying, Kathy's ridiculous. Ghosts aren't real. Let's just keep walking. And at this point, she decides to put on the pair of glasses that they have. And the jackal is right in front of her.
Yeah, that's that classic horror movie trope of, there's no such thing as ghosts. Enter
immediately
ghost.
Cute. Immediately enter ghost. So the jackal is dragging Kathy away, like pins her up against the wall, and is just clawing the shit out of her.
Oh, was she a bit turned on by this too, Jarvis? Yeah. Was she really like just a smidge?
100%, 100%. Were any of you even paying attention? Thank God.
So turned on by the blood curdling screams. And it's at this point, enter Karina, who throws a flare at the jackal, and they're able to pull Kathy away and make their escape. Now, it's at this point I'm mostly going to refer to Karina as Mrs. Exposition, because this is where we get our last full just dump of exposition, because at this point, besides like anything from the opening credit scene, there's just really been nothing plot-wise, just people wandering around and seeing ghosts. Karina explains that this isn't a house, it's a machine built by Cyrus known as the Ocularis Infernum, also known as the Eye of Hell, and that once this device is completed, it would allow its user to see into the future. And she tells him that all the ghosts in the house... And actually, including his wife, who is one of the ghosts. Actually, at this point, I wanted to take a quick second and actually list all the names of the ghosts. Because she does in the movie. So we've got the firstborn son, the torso, the bound woman, the withered lover, which is Jean, Arthur's wife, the torn prince, the Angry Princess that we've seen, the Pilgrimess, the Great Child, the Dire Mother, the Hammer, the Jackal, and the Juggernaut. And so she tells him that his kids are in grave danger, and the only way to ensure their safe return is that he has to offer his soul to the device and become the 13th ghost. At that point, his sacrifice of love would banish all the evil from the house and shut down the machine.
Great. So can we stop there for a second?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so all of the information that you're citing comes from the Arcanum. So that is the book. And this story in particular has no shortage of kind of fan theories. It's I don't know if we'd go so far as to say a cult classic, but it definitely has instances where one could relate to another movie. Say, for instance, the Necronomicon of the 1981 thriller, The Evil Dead. But I like to think of the Arcanum as like kind of like the college level curriculum of hell. Like if the Necronomicon went to grad school, which, because, you know, it's all about like engineering and like here's the recipe. You know, I thought that was kind of cool. There are fan theories that kind of say that they would kind of sort of belong to the same library of like, you know, hell's reading, if you will.
It just was a lot of information in a very short period of time. And it kind of just lost me with all the technical language and, oh, this is from this book and we're building this machine. And it just hits you over the head with it so fast you can't really process it.
Yeah, like, Jarvis, I'm glad you, like, caught the part about, you know, the Arcana and all that. Just because, just the dump of exposition, I was lost and just kind of sat there like, uh-huh.
I was like, yep, ghosts? Okay, cool. More ghosts? Got it.
Yep, yeah, ghosts. Oh, the names of the ghosts. All right, good. Oh, Gene's a ghost. Oh, that sucks.
This movie is paced a lot faster than I remember. I remember this being a long movie, but I guess what I'm remembering is just a lot of detail with very little plot. But yeah. In like my adolescent mind, I remember this movie being much longer. And when I watched it this time, I was like, 90 minutes, are they sure? And then I understood, like, oh, I was just young and dumb. And things just made sense because they're supposed to.
So they decide to split up again. Arthur and Dennis leave the room by taking out a panel of the glass with all the Latin writing on it to ward away the ghost. And they walk away with that while Karina and Maggie kind of go and try and shut down the machine. And so at this point, Maggie sees what appears to be like the ghost of Cyrus, and Karina immediately turns and knocks Maggie out with the book, unconscious. And this is when we find out that Karina is actually helping Cyrus with his master plan, and that he's actually not dead, and they're banging.
It was pretty predictable it was going to happen, because this is the type of thing that happens in these type of movies. But just the reveal where she's got the glasses on, and she sees him, and you think, oh, she could see him because he's a ghost haunting his own house. But she takes the glasses off, and he's still there. That was a good reveal. I like that part.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I didn't hate both reveals. I thought they were kind of cool. I do really quickly, the ocularis, like, I almost wish they didn't reveal what it is meant to do. I almost just kind of wish it was just an eccentric addition to the rest of the house. Like, what happens when all the, you know, 12 ghosts are assembled? Yeah, you know, and like this big machine is turning and it's like, oh my God, and the Wi-Fi is turned on. Like, that's the whole point of like the 12 ghosts. You know what I mean?
Literally it. The fact that it's just like, you know, all this is done, the user can see the future. And I was just like, it seems like there's a lot of unnecessary steps to see the future. So, there's a little bit of dialogue back and forth between Karina and Cyrus, but he takes the book from her, and he's just kind of like, well, I don't really need you anymore. And as he says that, one of the walls of the house kind of closes in and crushes her to death.
She got smooshed.
She did get smooshed.
What was the point of her smooshing? Before we go on, it lended absolutely nothing to the plot. And I am one not to complain about a good body smooshing. But
I was gonna say, are you not a fan of smooshing?
No, and honestly, that was that good low point of the CGI.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think that was probably the worst CGI within the film. But more importantly, it added absolutely nothing to further the plot or to further his goal as a, you know.
Well, so all he says, I think in that exact moment, the words are sacrifices.
Some people never learn.
No?
Some people never learn. Sacrifices must be made.
Yeah. Like you said, I don't think it progressed anything, but it
did nothing.
It just made him actually the bad guy again, like more the bad guy, I guess.
More than he was before with his glass house and bathrooms.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Dan, why didn't she become the 13th ghost? Or why didn't Dennis become the 13th ghost? Or why didn't the lawyer become the 13th ghost?
It was because
she brought the book out of a pure act of love, misguided though it may have been.
The lawyer took the money out of a pure act
love
of
for money.
Love for money, yes.
As lawyers do.
Yeah. So Arthur and Dennis are trying to get through the hall, get past all the ghosts with their, fancy glass shield. But then they're kind of cornered by both the hammer and the juggernaut. And Dennis sacrifices himself, pushes Arthur back with the glass and protects him with it. And he just gets his shit rocked by both the hammer and the juggernaut at the same time. Eventually, the juggernaut just picks him up and snaps his back against like a corner of the wall, bending him.
This one was heart-wrenching. And this is another one that I recall as a kid remembering, you know, throughout my childhood. Early in my years as a young horror enthusiast, Matthew Lillard is fucking awesome. And it was interesting how quickly he went from, like, just money-hungry to, like, for zero without any recourse, he was just like, all right, fuck it. And he just, like, offered himself up to die. I thought it was a little rushed. I think he could have had kind of a more complete moment.
I agree.
Yeah.
But it, no matter what my reservations are or what I wish would have happened this way or that way, Matthew Lillard absolutely fucking demolishes this role.
Oh, yeah. Like, as much as I'm at least watching it now, like 10 years later, like, not the biggest fan of this movie, but I will watch any movie that just has Matthew Lillard just chewing up the scenery.
100%.
Being the life of the movie. So at this point, Cyrus starts playing one of his Latin chants over the speakers of the house, and this starts drawing the ghost to the spinning clock floor, as Jarvis mentioned before, which now sitting in the center of it is Kathy and Bobby, trapped by the spinning rings in the center. Arthur sees Cyrus, and Cyrus tells him that, unlike what Karina told him, him sacrificing himself and becoming the 13th ghost doesn't stop the machine, but actually triggers it.
You know, he describes that machine as a machine designed by the devil and powered by the dead, and immediately my first thought was like, you know, in your heart of hearts, that's some dude's Tinder profile when he goes to HorrorCon. Like, I am a machine designed by the devil, empowered by the dead. Please come see me at the Holiday Inn tonight. This is the only time of the year that I have any chance with a woman.
And if that line doesn't bring him in, then I don't know what will. Because that's like your classic, like, away message of an A. I'm just like your emo. I'm made by the devil, empowered by the dead.
And you know, another question I have, did Latin die, because Latin's a dead language, did it die because, like, something as innocuous as, like, a bread recipe just immediately summoned the dead and 12 ghosts to the center of a giant ticking mechanism in the shape of a glass house?
I was trying to make cookies. Oh, shit.
I said yeast, not beast.
Guys, I think the podcast is really just kind of like the bare minimum of what we can do. This is a horror sitcom. Horror sitcom is what we need to be doing here.
Mike, did you say beast instead of yeast?
What is that? Jerry Seinfeld sound effects all the way around.
So as Cyrus is about to, I guess, I don't know, we're kind of just zoned out at this point. Is EJ trying to, like, throw Arthur into the rings to make him die, or is he just trying, like,
no,
him to kill?
The goat. Well, okay, yeah. He's trying to trick him. He's still trying to persuade him into jumping on his own.
Okay, yeah, and then it's like Maggie fucks with the speakers that messes up the chant, and that's when the ghosts kind of get out of their trance, and they're like, oh yeah, fuck this guy, he captured us. And they just grab him, they chuck him right into the spinning rings, and he gets ripped to pieces.
I am not one to take kind of, the that's racist platform, but the fact that Maggie got on the Latin tapes and turned them into like Snoop Dogg's turntables.
Yeah, I immediately found that to be kind of like
it was a little
her being a DJ. Yeah.
Yeah, how like, did she drop the beat so hard? That's all I want to know.
And so this is when the ghost of Dennis appears and tells Arthur that he just needs to jump through the ring and save his kids.
That's it.
Yeah. So I don't know how anyone else felt. Anyone else who like, you know, play certain kinds of games that involve what are called quick time events, but I imagine Arthur jumping through those rings was he hit every quick time event flawlessly.
Oh yeah.
he jumped, pressed triangle at the perfect time, and boom, simple, jumped right through the spinning rings. And then just by him doing that and being there with his kids, yeah, just everything shuts off. It's over. Machine's broken. And at that point the ghosts all get to leave the house and be at rest, I guess. And as they're all sitting there, we see the ghost of Jean for a second, who pretty much sticks around just to say, you know, love you, deuces. And she disappears, and as they all are now leaving the destroyed house, Maggie says she isn't cleaning up this mess, and she quits. The end.
Okay. Ending is nonsensical.
Yes.
But I love it. Because of Maggie.
Yeah. I'm not cleaning the shit. I quit.
I mean, as the family, like, if you had to be, like, looking outside to, like, that just that trail of, like, psychopathic, murderous ghosts, I just wish, like, Tony Shalhoub would have, like, grabbed them by the shoulder. The son or the daughter would have just been like, are you sure we did the right thing? And then Tony would have gone, no.
No, no, that's we it. Didn't. We just released 12 murderous ghosts into the world, and that's just something we're going to have to deal with.
Right. If I had also, my way, that's what it would be.
I also like to think about it as like they're all walking away. I thought, like, you know, one of those ghosts is just a torso. I hope one of the other ones like picked him up and like we're carrying him. Otherwise, he's just sitting back in the room, just like guys,
help. Giant baby, help me.
Puke baby, help me. And that's the movie. Kyle, can you take it from here, please? I don't want to anymore.
You know, I think I will. I think I'll just I'll take it over to cinematography real quick. And special effects. Yeah, I think some of the special effects worked really well in this movie. I think some of the ghosts look pretty badass. The makeup was really good. I think the whirling mechanism is the CGI is very bad on it. But I think that all the other parts of this, the actual like the set design and the house design itself is obviously the big focal point. And one of the things I read that they described it as, it's not about the 13 ghosts in this movie. It's actually the 13 ghosts and the house. Because the house was literally a character on its own, just because of all the stuff that was involved with making it and everything. And I don't know, it was a really cool, that was really cool. Cinematography, yeah, I don't know. All the glass didn't work for me, though. I liked the house, but like, it did a really good job at explaining that it's very hard to get around this house because every other turd looks just like the last one. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they did the right thing, but either way, yeah, shuts down hallways, shuts down corners, and whatever else. And the blurring effect for the ghost was all right. Like, when I say blurring, I mean, like, you know, when they had the glasses on versus when they had them off. I thought it was a little annoying with the people who had the glasses on, that it still seemed like the ghosts were fading in and out. But I don't know, maybe that was, I just wasn't understanding how it was supposed to be. But I don't know. I think it worked.
It's playing the audience.
I think it was supposed to be one of those things where, like, you can see them through the glasses, but the ghost can still decide whether you see them or not, like, kind of popping around.
Maybe a little
bit.
That was
one of the moments where, like, the hammer shows up, even though Dennis had the glasses on, and the hammer just kind of pops up, and Dennis falls back, and he just says, you know, I hate it when they do that.
Yeah, I did hear that the actual original film had like the use of those red and blue 3D glasses or whatever, so you could wear those.
Yeah.
While you're watching the movie, and that was supposed to do stuff, probably just do 3D effect or whatever. So that would have been neat, but
I think it was supposed to be like that's how you saw the ghosts watching that movie.
Right. So I can understand how some of the use of camera angles with some of the ghosts was like a hey, watch out, this thing's coming through the screen kind of thing, which always turns out bad later on in life, you know. So
yeah, I think the whole movie was just big conceptually. Whether or not they were able to execute that visually or from a graphic effects standpoint, it was a little half and half, you know.
Yeah,
there were some of the gore in here is some of like my all-time favorite, and I say that sincerely. And then other times you're like, yeah, man, that sucks that you went cheap. I mean, just the scale of it felt very comic booky. Just in that, like, you know, they hit the ground running, you're in the storyline immediately. And you feel the scale of the story. I think the big problem overall, and it's not just visually, but also in the storytelling, is that just the story ultimately is just too big to fit in 90 minutes concisely.
Yeah, but if it was longer than 90 minutes, I definitely would check out of it.
Sure, yeah. This is one of those things I think ultimately should be a miniseries.
Yeah. I do have like an interesting tidbit regarding like the cinematography and anything. The production designer for the movie, Sean Hargreaves, I believe his name is, like the guy who came up with the idea or the design of the house, he went on to become the senior concept designer for some small budget movies like Infinity War, Endgame, and Thor Ragnarok.
Whoa. Never heard of him. Is that some indie movie?
Yeah, these small-time movies that I don't really think they made a whole lot. So, I mean, I guess he, you know, went on to do some decent things.
I did like the design of all the ghosts in this movie. They all had their own unique feel to them.
Yeah.
And just the house was a weak point for me because it just seemed like too much with all the writing on the walls and the glass walls and the corridors, and it just felt like a mess. So that took away from the effects for me.
Yeah, so if we're cool with those, then sound design and music. I don't remember either of these being a thing ever.
No, they weren't.
They specifically say that the house cuts down on sound, so I don't know why they would mention that. Like the glass.
So they can't hear you scream.
So they can't hear you scream. beyond that, I'm not too sure there's anything spectacular in any direction. So. If we're good there, then I would love if there was a spoopy meter, Mr. Dan. Do you have one for this week?
I don't think Dan is still here.
I assume
he like an hour ago.
Yeah, I think Dan's been gone for a while.
Special guest spoopy meter.
Well, the obvious number is 13.
So yeah, we cannot use 13.
We'll do nothing even remotely close. So back to HGTV. In terms of square footage, this house was approximately 10,000 square feet. So, gentlemen, from 1 to 10,000, how many square feet are you buying from this movie?
Huh. Well. If I were to, if I'm going to sublease a portion of this, I guess, I will do, spoopy meter. I was not scared one bit this entire movie. I wouldn't even rent one square foot. I'll give it 1 square foot just to say I'm on the lease, I guess. But, the actual movie, I got a little bored halfway through. I think 45 minutes in is when it gets a bit slow. It picks up and down. I think that somebody had a really good idea with the 12 ghosts, and they really, like, I feel like there was something to it, and they really wanted you to know that there was something to it. But the execution was okay. I think Tony Shalhoub was a good actor. I don't know, 10,000 square feet. Oh boy, I'll give it 1,000 square feet. A nice sizable apartment.
Yeah, that's solid. That's generous. I'll probably be a little bit more generous, but not by much. But also, spooky wise, not scary at all. I'm also just gonna give it a square foot, just so, like, you know, I put my toe in. I'll put my foot in. I'm slightly interested, but I'm probably gonna, you know, look around for something else. I think definitely when I first saw this movie, like a decade ago, like I think I enjoyed it more, but coming into it this time, like the nostalgia of it like completely disappeared, and I was like, man, this story is horrible. This, I just can't follow what the fuck is going on. If it wasn't for the fact that two things that actually still redeemed this movie a small bit to me is the ghosts themselves and Matthew Lillard. That's it. I hate that the ghosts are just like, you do get the names of the ghosts, but there's so much more like story and lore behind them, and it sucks that they're only behind the like DVD special features of the movie. If anyone listening, if you plan on watching this movie, or if you've seen the movie before and you don't know what I'm talking about, like, you can find it on YouTube. And I think it's like the one thing I would suggest about this movie is that you go and at least watch the behind the scenes part where it actually goes and dives deep into the story behind each of the ghosts. Because besides Matthew Lillard, like, the ghosts are the only good part of this movie for me. Everything else, I could care less. So 10,000 square feet, I'll be a little bit better than Kyle. I'm going to go 1,500.
I'm about on the same page as you guys. I'm not going to rehash the things that you said, but yeah, out of 10,000 square feet as a movie, it's kind of a very bad movie. I didn't like it too much. It kind of was oversaturated with unnecessary plot details. So 10,000 square feet with 13 ghosts, it's about 769 square feet to a ghost. So I'm going to give it a 769 square feet out of spoopiness and quality.
Wow, okay. A lot of strong feelings. I like this. So this is a movie that I saw throughout various points of my life. Haven't seen it in a long time. And I think the biggest difference between back then and now is, nostalgia versus objectivity. And I think in this instance, objectivity wins. I have a problem with stories that aren't good stories. You know, you could have all the money in the world. You can have incredible actors, which this film does. You could have pretty decent CGI throughout most of this film. It does. But the story is too big to contain inside of the vessel in which they presented the audience. The talent was impressive. Conceptually, it's so strong, and it has such a cult backstory now, because there are specific backstories to all the ghosts. There are fan theories about the book and the different ghosts and all kinds of things. And honestly, this movie could be set up into a phenomenal short series. But unfortunately, what we're judging off of is the story from the movie, this movie, and out of 10,000 square feet, I won't deviate too much from you guys. I'm probably going to go about 2,000, just because I do like it. It's fun. I would watch it. I wouldn't pay attention very hard, but there's things I like, and I think that's where I'll leave it. Spoopy-wise, I will say there were some things that got me, especially as a kid, but even now. Between the hammer and the juggernaut, I think they're pretty, they worked well together. Matthew Lillard's character knows that all too well, but anyway, so I will leave it there. Good movie, would watch, would recommend, but cautiously. Thank you. Can I do a real quick thing? Because none of us mentioned the fact, I mean, yeah, we mentioned 2001, but we are rapidly approaching the 20-year anniversary of this film.
Oh, yeah.
October 26th is the release date.
Yeah, the one thing I saw is actually when all the ghosts walk away at the end, that was done like as a reshoot, like just something to wrap up at the end. And from what I read, like, it seemed kind of awkward for some people, or at least some people Like one guy I watched talking about it said he probably, everyone probably felt awkward because that was filmed on September 11th, 2000. So during that day, those people were sitting in chairs for 5-6 hours of makeup. And they still had to shoot that scene.
Yep. That'll do. That's
my
weird time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, you know, we all have, I think, particular feelings on this. It is a remake from a 1960 original film. Mm-hmm. So it the only reason I mention that is to say it was redone once. Perhaps it can be redone again. Perhaps a different way of storytelling. I think there's a whole lot of really good story here. And I think there's a ton of possibilities that you can do with this story.
I think if it was redone on like an HBO like Stars kind of thing, like in like a two-part like mini series.
Oh yeah,
I would definitely get.
I'm going with a short
13 form, parts.
Maybe 13 parts. I'm going with a short form like anime or like a animated film or animated series. Or something. All
right,
like that.
Calm down, you fucking nerd.
Yeah, I would do that.
Anime is not for me.
Okay, so
I think that's what me. I think that's what me and Jarvis line up. Cartoons for children.
Let me retract. an animated film or animated series.
Either way, Mike's just going to say it's a cartoon for children.
Oh, yeah. Cartoons are for children.
Kyle just wants to see anime titties. That's all his motive is.
Don't you? on that note of anime titties, cool. So I'm thinking I want to thank Andrew Cavanaugh for our intro and outro music. You can find his link in the description. I want to thank Connor McLeod for our artwork. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank all the ghosts for listening as well. And I think we'll give it up here. I really appreciate everything that everybody does for and with this show. Thank you, Travis, if you are editing this episode. And then, yeah, Chris, what do you want to tell the 13 ghosts?
Thanks for stopping by and having a horrible time.
Dude, the tits in this movie are fucking, like, legendary. Like, don't even start.